All right. So my colleagues on the bench, y'all ready to proceed to the third case?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is Anthony Richard Dominguez on behalf of Petitioner Carlos Rendon, and may it please the Court. With the stop time rule, a key new provision of IRA-IRA, Congress enacted a new bar to discretionary relief, stopping the accrual of pertinent continuous residence upon the occurrence of certain events, in this case, the commission of certain crimes. Absent clear indication of retroactive application from Congress, the stop time rule should not apply retroactively here because it would attach a new legal consequence to past events and increase petitioner's liability for his past conduct. This new legal consequence is a complete and total bar from requesting discretionary relief via cancellation of removal. Further, the stop time rule would increase petitioner's liability for past conduct because at the time of his convictions in 1995, petitioner was not deportable from the United States under pre-IRA-IRA law. Here, petitioner specifically pled guilty to 364 days in jail for his burglary conviction in 1995, ensuring that he was not deportable from the United States under pre-IRA-IRA law, record 553 to 555. Petitioner did not become deportable from the United States until the passage of Section 435 of ADEPA on April 24, 1996, which amended Section 241 of the INA to make an alien removable who has committed a CIMT for which a sentence may be imposed of a year and longer, whereas previously an alien must have served a term of a year or longer, thus petitioner's plea for 364 days. Furthermore, at the time of his guilty plea in 1995 for possession of marijuana, the INA did not make an alien removable for possession of marijuana under 30 grams, and it still does not to this day. Therefore, although petitioner would contend that he need not show detrimental reliance in the Landgraf analysis after Vartelis, he nonetheless clearly had a settled expectation that his actions did not make him deportable. The retroactive application of the stop time rule would attach a new legal disability, being a complete and total bar from requesting discretionary relief in immigration court, and that would attach retroactively to his offenses and the expectation he had when he was convicted that he was not deportable from the United States. Now,
counsel, this is Judge Baldock, and I actually a couple of simple questions, but the first one is, did Mr. Reardon's 1995 conviction render him immediately deportable?
No, they did not, Your Honor.
My second question, did it have any convictions prior to 1998 that would have rendered him deportable?
Well, actually, what happened... the change of law in the combination of ADEPA and IRA-IRA actually made his first conviction for the burglary deportable. It made him deportable. However, at the time he pled guilty, it did not. The Ninth Circuit in Sinontes, this is the same analysis, or this is the same fact pattern, and they credited the change of law to IRA-IRA, but I believe it was Section 435 of ADEPA on April 24th, 1996, that changed the removability clause of a CIMT, making it that all if you could have been convicted for more than 1 year in jail or sentence, then you were removable. Whereas prior to, at the time of his conviction and his guilty plea, as long as you did not serve 1 year in jail, you were not removable for that crime under 364 days. Additionally, an applicant is not removable for possession of marijuana under 30 grams under the Immigration and Nationality Act. So it was the combination of ADEPA first that made him removable, and its sister legislation, of course, IRA-IRA, which then attached the new legal consequence of the stop time rule. So in a very short period of time, he went...
Can I ask you just a quick question? All of this seems awfully new to me, and I might just have missed it, but is this the same argument that you made in your brief, that the 1995 conviction didn't render him immediately removable?
Your Honor, unfortunately, that specific detail was not pointed out specifically in the brief.
Where unspecifically was it pointed out in the brief?
Well, it's inferable from page 553 to 555 of the record. He specifically pled guilty to 364 days. Additionally, although it's not cited in the brief, I know section 435 of ADEPA, which Public Law 110 Statute 1274, amended section INA, section 241 of the INA, to make that change in the sentencing for a year or more. So it's inferable from the record. I apologize. It was not specifically addressed in the brief. However, I believe this is more of a factual background point. It's not necessarily like a legal argument, but it's that's where in the record where it would be inferable if the court would take judicial notice of Section 435 of ADEPA, which was passed on April 24th, 1996.
Just speaking for myself, and I've been there as an appellate lawyer, and sometimes you have new epiphanies in the run-up to oral argument, but this seems to me to be a pretty dramatic departure from the theory that you laid out in the brief.
Well, Your Honor, in the brief, I believe I try to distinguish that under Landsgraf Step 2, this court should follow the cases of the Ninth Circuit, the Seventh Circuit in Judy, and the Fourth Circuit in Trihori. I just wanted to point that out as a factual inference. I believe there's still arguments as to the application, the retroactive application. Although this factual point wasn't pointed out in the briefs, unfortunately, I do believe the brief, and I apologize to the court, is lacking a little bit of an analysis in certain regards. So I wanted to point out that factual point and bring up the passage of ADEPA. However, I would
hold on a minute, because you keep referring to ADEPA. Was it applied retroactively?
Yes, actually. Section 435, the section I'm referring to, has a specific congressional intent that says it would apply retroactively. Additionally, this isn't the time, I believe, to raise that argument. I believe that argument would have been raised in pleadings, like if that section shouldn't have been applied retroactively. However, the plain language of the statute of 435, effective date, quote, the amendment made by subsection A shall apply to aliens against whom deportation proceedings are initiated after the date of the enactment. So that is not the argument that we're making here, that ADEPA should not be applied retroactively. It's just the factual background into which we must consider if there is a new legal consequence.
This is Beverly Martin. So does that mean you lose because of the retroactive application language in this provision of the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act?
No, Your Honor. Because while it made him removable, which he later conceded at immigration court when he admitted to the charges, I believe the NTA is on page 7. 747 of the record. If you were going to argue that ADEPA shouldn't have applied and you should have never been removable at all because the change of definition of a CIMT shouldn't apply retroactively, it would have been done in the pleading stage. And he's not making that argument here, petitioner. Additionally, all it does is it changed while he went from not removable at all to removable to completely barred for discretionary relief. It shows the progress that he went through. Nonetheless, the fact remains, prior to that change of law, it was the fact that he was not removable from the United States.
So this is Judge Newsom. One difficulty, when I was asking about whether or not this was a departure from the theory that you had laid out in your brief, you said, well, we also have the other argument that you should follow, the Ninth and Seventh or whoever circuits. I mean, it strikes me that one difficulty for you is that those cases are all distinguishable in the sense that in those cases, the petitioners met their 7-year requirement before Herrera's effective date, right?
So yes, Your Honor.
If you can have a vested right in a discretionary determination, there was a vested right before the statute came into effect, but here that's not the case.
Well, Your Honor, and thank you for bringing that up. In each of those cases, at the time of their convictions and guilty pleas, none of the petitioners had already had the 7 years of lawful presence, so the necessary for 212C. Therefore, when they decided to take their pleas and their conviction, thank you. The settled expectation, they only had a settled expectation that 212C relief would become available in the future if they got to 7 years. Now, additionally, in the Landgraf analysis, when we're looking at the new liability for past conduct, the past conduct that we have to look to is the conviction, the guilty plea, the offense. It's not, we don't look back as to this hypothetical vestment of 212C rights that happened between the conviction and before the passage of IRA-IRA. I would argue that neither of those courts needed to rely on that fact. And additionally, that gets into the reliance, which I believe is unnecessary. The Seventh Circuit's decision is interesting in that regard, is that it also discusses Vartalis and say detrimental reliance, subjective reliance need not be demonstrated. And they kind of just throw that holding, that aspect that, oh, he also met his 7 years pre-IRA-IRA. But I do not believe it's necessary because the event that we have to judge in the past isn't the hypothetical vestment of the 212C rights, but is the time at he was pled guilty to this. Therefore, I believe I'm just about out of time. I will conclude by saying petitioner had the settled expectations that his actions did not make him deportable, and the retroactive application of the stop time rule would attach a new disability, being the complete and total bar to his discretionary relief, which through his plea agreement previously, he had ameliorated immigration consequences, assuring he was not deportable. Therefore, the retroactive application of the stop time rule would, in fact, be impermissible. Thank you.
Hello. May it please the Court, my name is Jesse Lorenz, and I represent the Attorney General of the United States in this matter. I'd like to start out by noting that before the agency, Mr. Rendon conceded removability, and he also did not argue that his conviction wasn't an event that triggered the stop time rule. His argument focused solely on the retroactive application of the stop time rule. So I think his arguments regarding his burglary conviction and his marijuana conviction weren't exhausted below. Also, the AEDPA arguments, those were not exhausted below either. I also don't believe he raised any of those arguments in his brief. I also would like to note that the convictions at issue are his possession of cocaine conviction, which rendered him removable, and the CAMT, or the crime involving moral turpitude conviction that triggered the application of the stop time rule, was his resisting an officer with violence conviction, and those were all what was presented before the agency and argued in his brief, I believe. So I think these arguments about the burglary conviction, the marijuana conviction, and AEDPA, those weren't exhausted and it weren't argued in his opening brief. With that in mind, I think the court should dismiss the petition for review for lack of jurisdiction. Under the criminal alien bar, this court lacks jurisdiction to review a final order of removal against an alien who is removable due to a criminal conviction relating to a controlled substance. Here, Rendon was convicted of possession of cocaine.
This is Beverly Martin. I mean, you hadn't had much success with that argument. I mean, you and other circuits, I mean, you say we lack jurisdiction, but seven other circuits have weighed in on the retroactive effect of the stop time rule. So jurisdiction of this question.
Sure, it's not a question of whether you have jurisdiction over retroactivity. It's whether it's the impact of the criminal alien bar at 1252A2C, which precludes this court from reviewing cases that involve a certain conviction here, a possession of a controlled substance conviction, which he had in 2002, possession of cocaine, and he he conceded removability on that ground.
This is Judge Newsom. Doesn't A2D preserve jurisdiction over constitutional and legal questions? And why is it retroactivity a legal question?
Well, this court has specifically held that the criminal alien bar, that he cannot claim a constitutionally protected right because cancellation of removal.
Forget about the Constitution. A2D says the Constitution or questions of law.
Sure. Well, sure. And I think at bottom, we made the alternative argument, obviously, that retroactivity is fine in this case. But at bottom, retroactivity. So I guess that, yes, we're arguing both a constitutional bar and that, you know, the legal question isn't colorable.
Counsel, this is Judge Baldock. This is Judge Baldock, and I'd like for you to go to other arguments. Jurisdiction, you're having a hard time persuading me on that. So I think you'd be better served to present your best arguments.
Sure. And I think our best argument is that matter of Perez and the effective date rule of ARERA was clear that all any proceeding started after the effective date of ARERA, which is April 1st, 1997, includes the provisions of ARERA. And I think that's pretty clear here that his proceeding started well after the effective date of ARERA. So ARERA, the cancellation of removal.
Can you just show me where in the statute, and I might well have just missed it, but where in the statute does it say that it applies to any proceeding commenced after the effective date? All I could find in the statute was something that said the statute will go into effect on April 1, 1997.
So it's ARERA 309A, and the language is except as provided in sections that aren't relevant here. The subtitle and the amendments made by this subtitle shall take effect on the first day of the first month, beginning more than 180 days. Which is April 1st, 1997 in this case. So that is the language.
Doesn't that just beg the question of what it means for something to take effect? That doesn't say that it applies to proceedings commenced after.
And in addition, hadn't the Supreme Court expressly rejected that argument in St. Cyr?
Well, in different, if you're referring to St. Cyr, it's a different set of circumstances. I think 212C is a lot different. I mean, it was a quid pro quo nature of a plea bargain. Here we do have a plea of guilty, but the actual date that you look at for the triggering of the stop time rule is the commission of the crime.
I'm reading from St. Cyr, referring to section 309A, quote, does not even arguably suggest that it has any application to conduct that occurred at an earlier date, end quote.
Well, the other thing that is different here is that ARERA expressly created cancellation of removal. So this is a form of relief, which includes the stop time rule, but it wasn't even available until proceedings commenced after April 1st, 1997, whereas 212C had historically been available to aliens in deportation proceedings for a while. So I think it's a little bit different in that regard. There was nothing that was taken away by ARERA. In fact, ARERA added cancellation of removal, including the rules that limit the accrual of continuous physical presence in the country.
So are you still, I'm just going to channel my inner Judge Baldock here and maybe ask you to move on, but I mean, are you making a Landgraf Step 1 argument now, or are you making a Landgraf Step 2 argument?
No, that's fair. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't think that I'm convinced, in light of the plain language of the statute in St. Cyr, that you have a very good Landgraf Step 1 argument.
I mean, I was just trying to respond to the questions, I guess. But, yeah, I think our argument is that Landgraf Step 1, I mean, that's the board's precedent, that it's clear language. In our brief, board's precedent. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to confuse that. But in our brief, we argue that if this court does not believe Landgraf, we succeed at Landgraf Step 1, we argue that you should remand in light of Chenery and Ventura, because the board did not go to the Step 2 analysis. In fact, it specifically declined to because of its precedential decision in matter of Perez and matter of Robles. And we think that's appropriate if this court determines that Landgraf Step 1, because the board has expertise in immigration matters and would be able to best, we think, do a Landgraf Step 2 analysis regarding the application of the stop time rule. But
Well, isn't retroactivity? I mean, isn't retroactivity ultimately just a question of statutory interpretation? And haven't we said we don't need to send statutory interpretation questions back to the board?
Sure. And yes, I mean, I don't disagree with that. I guess our belief is that the best thing to do would be, or the most prudent thing, because the board does have expertise and the various nuances of ARERA and all the different things that were raised regarding that. But our belief is that matter of Perez and matter of Robles are clear, and that we should win at step one of Landgraf.
But can I ask you, in 1995, when Mr. Rendon pled guilty, was he removable under the statute at the time, INA 212C?
Well, I don't have a firm answer on that, Your Honor. I didn't prepare for that because that wasn't an issue that was raised. The immigration judge seems to think so, but that's really the best answer I could give you. I honestly did not think that was going to be an issue here because the agency proceedings didn't really involve his crimes. They more involved this retroactive application. The focus is on the CIMT, the resisting an officer with violence conviction, I would think. But I couldn't give you a firm answer on that at this time. I apologize for that.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem. I mean, like I said, it just wasn't an issue that was raised before the agency. I think the focus of this case really is on Section 309A of ARERA and whether that was clear. And we believe it is based on Perez and Robles. I think one of the things to keep in mind when making this analysis is that he's also trying to use time before the enactment of that provision. So we have kind of a tug both ways. I mean, he needs the time he was in this country before ARERA was enacted, but he doesn't want the disqualifying crimes to impact his eligibility for cancellation of removal. So we think if there's no further questions, Your Honor, I don't really have anything else to add.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. In regards to respondent's point that he conceded removability as to the CIMT charge in NTA on page 747, he never attempted to make the argument that ADEPA shouldn't have applied retroactively, and he's not making that argument here now. He only raised that point to point out a factual inference that sets the foreground for the analysis, the Landgraf analysis, which this court should follow. Specifically, just so too did the Cenontes Court of the Ninth Circuit did this, pointed this factual difference out on page 1202 of their decision. In regards to Appellee's argument that the court lacks jurisdiction, I would agree with the court that 1252A2D clearly provides this court with jurisdiction as retroactivity is a clear legal question and one which actually, in this case, passes Chevron deference because retroactivity is an exception to Chevron. Now, that once there's ambiguity in the statute, which there is ambiguity in the statute of 1229B1D as to its retroactive application, the court should apply the Landgraf step two analysis. In regards to Appellee's argument that the transitional rule provides for retroactive application in this case, I would reject that argument in the fact that the clear language or the standard for this is that courts must avoid retroactive application unless compelled to do so by language so clear and positive as to leave no room to doubt that such was the intention of the legislature. In the transitional rule, they only first mentioned notices to appear, later changed that orders to show cause that specific provision of the stop time rule should apply retroactively. Therefore, absent that provision, there is no clear language or clear intention of Congress of retroactive application, and the court should move to Landgraf step two. Additionally, In response to his argument, respondent's argument that IRA created cancellation of removal, it didn't create cancellation of removal. What it did is it added a new total bar to discretionary relief, and that is a new legal consequence. Discretionary relief has been around in some form since 1917. The Fourth Circuit in Jigahori discusses this best evolution at pages 766-767. Furthermore, after Vartelas, petitioner need not show that he relied detrimentally on the fact that on the laws previously. What matters is that, and I will briefly conclude, is that petitioner had a settled expectation that his actions did not make him deportable, and the retroactive application of the stop time rule would attach the new disability, a complete and total bar to be able to request discretionary relief, which is different than an approval of discretionary relief, just the ability to request a decision and a determination of discretionary relief, and that new consequence attaches to the expectation he has.
Before you sit down, can I just ask a question? So after your client pled guilty to resisting an officer with violence, but before the passage of ARERA, was he eligible for discretionary relief during that time period?
Well, he specifically pleaded guilty to his two convictions, and for that sake, when I referred to the burglary conviction, I meant to the whole gambit of convictions there that starts with the burglary and ends with battery. But specifically to your point, what he did was he ameliorated the immigration consequences. So he preserved that he was not deportable in any way for those crimes. Additionally, he preserved his expectation that he would continue to accumulate time should 212C relief be necessary at that time. That's the same expectation that each petitioner had in the Ninth Circuit case, the Seventh Circuit case, and the Fourth Circuit case. Because just like petitioner here, none of those petitioners had the 7 years when they negotiated their plea, when they traded the right to go to trial to ameliorate their immigration consequences, to avoid a total bar of discretionary relief, and to still attach the double protection, which actually is referred to the Ninth Circuit on 1202, that double protection, you're not deportable, and you have the expectation that you will continue to accumulate time for the 7 years in 212C. And that kind of relates back to Judge Newsom's question as to what's the difference here if he didn't, that 212C right didn't later vest. Well, the action, the past action which must be judged is his offense and his decision to either admit committing that offense and giving up his right to trial to ameliorate the decision. And what was his expectation? Okay.
I got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That concludes our arguments for the day, I think. So court will be in recess, and we will reconvene tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.